All right, everybody is conforming to nonconformity by waiting patiently in line to get on the air. We'll get to your calls coming up in just a second. What is your act of nonconformity? What have you already done? What do you hope to do? How can Chris Guillebeau help you live a life of nonconformity? We'll get to that coming up this hour on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's pick it up with Robert in Oklahoma City on Coast to Coast for Chris Guillebeau, The Art of Nonconformity. Robert?
Hi. I have a little bit of a different perspective on all this. I'm an individual, which I'm a nonconformist because I don't see too many individuals. And basically, I love to wake people up, but the thing is, I kind of see things in a realistic way, and I see two types of people now. A lot of mechanical people, or people are becoming more mechanical, and then I see kind of a group of people that are kind of waking up from that. And I'm not a rebel, because I find that the rebels are kind of conforming to being rebels. So basically, I'm
sounds hard to be you, Robert. It sounds like you're carrying an enormous burden to be you.
Well, not really. I just see things from a realistic way. And
I'm going to jump in here, Robert. You sound like so many people I know. So in that way, you sound like a lot of people I know who feel right. Like they have a corner on realism, that they alone, and that when they get people to think like they do, that's waking them up.
Well, what I mean is, I think everybody should think for themselves, but I'm seeing society conforming people into becoming very mechanical.
Okay.
And I'm just looking at it from a realistic point. I think everybody should think the way they should think. You know,
so they can think completely different from you, and that'll be okay. If they think 180 degrees differently from what you believe,
well, okay, what I
that's
see
still okay.
What I see is an over-commercialized world that is telling people how to think, and I think that's wrong, you know.
Okay. All right. Chris, you have a thought on this?
Well, I would agree with that. I guess I would agree with what Robert said about how, you know, everyone should decide for themselves to think, and that maybe the world is over-commercialized. I guess I would just wonder, you know, when you mentioned realism or being realistic, what is realistic to you? Because I think a lot of the stories we've been hearing, you know, the people that have been calling in sharing their own stories about doing something that's unconventional, that is very realistic to them. I mean, that's very real.
Not to mention the number of people who probably said to you in a lifetime, Chris, what you're thinking of is not realistic.
Not realistic, not practical, you know,
right.
All kinds of things.
And that threat of, you know, hey, I understand what's real, you don't, that's what confines people to a life, to something other than what they believe, because they feel like, well, gosh, this person must know, you know, what reality really is, so I'm going to go with them on a sort of a leap of faith.
I mean, I guess I also think that almost anyone who's ever innovated, anyone who's ever begun something or started something, or anyone who's ever, you know, taken any kind of unconventional path, any kind of road not taken or make their own road. I mean, almost anyone in that situation, they've almost heard, you know, many times that what they're doing is not realistic, right? What they're doing is, you know, it's not something that everyone can do. It's not practical. Maybe they should wait, et cetera. So that's why I'm always a little bit cautious when, you know, I hear that word realistic, but maybe it's just contextual. Maybe Robert doesn't mean it that way.
You know what it is for me? It's absolutely visceral when people start telling me about reality as though they have empirical knowledge. Some sort of God's eye view of what reality is, and that other people that don't agree with them are sleeping. And I'm totally allergic to that. So that's my reaction. And I take responsibility for that reaction, but I chafe at that. Sam is in New York on Coast to Coast, for Chris Guillebeau, The Art of Nonconformity. Sam.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today? I'll be honest with you. I live the best of both worlds, I believe. And that's just for me. I got a job that I love. But about 15 years ago, I got involved in the sport of mixed martial arts. And I saw the way that we were working out, and it totally blew me away. So what I did was I concentrated on that, and I used these cage fighting well, this like a quote-unquote cage for this workout to train a national figure bodybuilding champion with it. And we put out some tapes and stuff like that, and I'm just wondering what Chris might be able to suggest where I could take it to the next level. I mean, it became the first accredited mixed martial arts course, you know, for certifications and everything like that through a national organization. And I wanted to know, you know, be honest with you, I would love to do, you know, mass seminars across the country.
Yeah, that's great, Sam. Well, congratulations on getting the best of both worlds.
I love my job and I love what I do, you know. That's why I work nights.
That's awesome. I guess my question for you is in terms of the business side of things, how much of your work is on the internet now?
Actually, I'm getting ready to try to utilize more YouTube stuff on the internet. I don't know if that's the right move or not.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of what I call the small army approach, like recruiting a small army of people to, you know, help you get the message out. And I think, you know, I don't think the internet is everything, but I think one thing that's really great about the internet is we have the ability to kind of put this message online and then go out and recruit people who are like-minded and recruit people who are interested in what you're doing that will basically help you do whatever you want to do, whether it's seminars across the country, whether it's developing a product, you know, that can be purchased and downloaded or shipped or whatever. I mean, I think the benefit of that is, like, if you can have a worldwide message, then people don't have to be in New York or you don't have to travel to L.A. or wherever they are. You know, you can have something that can be shared all over the world. So I guess the more you can work towards an online strategy, I think the easier it will be in terms of achieving the reach you're looking for.
One more question, Kristen. I'll let you go, I promise. I have coaches courses out now with a major company. I use the process that I call OPR, other people's resources on this, and it worked out fairly well for me. But I caught a lot of flack from a lot of blogs and stuff like that, where people were, you know, some quote unquote purists in the world were mad because I went with a coaches course approach. I mean, how would you handle something like that?
What kind of approach was it called? You said a coach's course or something?
Yeah, they're coach's courses. In other words, they're like long-distance video courses where they test. You know, they'll buy the materials, and then they'll take the materials, study them, and then they will, you know, they'll send me a video with them showing the techniques, and then I grade them on it, basically.
Okay. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, in terms of what you said about OPR, other people's resources, I think in the long term, you're going to be more successful if you develop your own resources.
Well, absolutely.
I don't necessarily think it's bad or unethical or anything. I just think it might be ineffective, you know, in the long term to be using other people's resources. I think in the long term, like, you've got this message, you've got this skill that you spent a long time developing.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to want to know, like, what is your unique take on it? You know, what do you have to share with people? And then, you know, that's ultimately the message that's going to be interesting and going to be unique.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Chris. I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks, Sam.
Really good advice. And, you know, I'm kind of mixed on the mixed martial arts thing. I mean, it's really brutal, and I fear for how many mixed martial artists 10 years from now are going to be having major brain issues. But it is fascinating to watch. It is sport in its rawest form. Joy is in Santa Cruz, California, on Coast to Coast for Chris Guillebeau. Go ahead, Joy.
Hi. I actually came up with a question while I was on hold, too. I was wondering, first of all, I am very much a nonconformist in that I live on a cooperative in Santa Cruz. We actually have a community where we've come together and created, and we're all nonconformists here. Everybody here is a nonconformist. In this community. And I'm also a hand spinner and a weaver, which is something that people don't do anymore. And I raise alpacas. So I'm actually
Great.
Getting back
well
to the
done.
Land. But my question for Chris is, do you find that nonconformists tend to be more progressive?
Progressive in what way? In a political sense?
Yeah.
Well, I would say I have a pretty big tent philosophy, and, you know, at least in my network specifically, when I certainly don't include, I'm not inclusive of all nonconformists. Of course, there's plenty of nonconformists who don't use the internet or don't read books or whatever, and that's fine. But I have a pretty big tent philosophy, and I've got a lot of progressives. I've also got some conservatives, and that's fine. I guess when I say progressive, I'm thinking not just in terms of a political sense. When I say progressive, I'm thinking, like, are you open-minded? You know, are you open-minded to other ideas? Are you open to people who might disagree with you?
Well, I think that's an element of being a nonconformist, you have to have an open mind in the first place.
Right. So since you have to have an open mind, then I would say, you know, there are nonconformists who are progressive, there are nonconformists who are conservative, there are libertarians, there are, you know, people who would say they're apolitical. I mean, most of us have some kind of political belief, but I would say there's a broad spectrum.
Hey, Joy, I have a question I want to ask you. In a community of nonconformists,
yeah,
wouldn't the greatest act of nonconformity be to conform?
That's a really clever question, Ian.
Like, I mean, get a real job and to wear a dress code to work every day.
You have to learn how to cooperate in ways that you wouldn't normally on a suburban street where everybody's got their own little house and nobody communicates with each other.
Well, but I'm saying that would be the greatest act of nonconformity. Would be you get a Brady Bunch house and you get, you know, avocado appliances or whatever, and you go to a job and you don't, you do the whole Pleasant Valley Sunday thing, you know, you just, and that would stand out as a total kind of oddity in a town of nonconformity. Paul is in Los Angeles, first time caller line on Coast to Coast. Paul?
Hello.
Hey.
I am a conformist. I'm 53 years old. I've been a lawyer for almost 30 years. I have a family with a kid in college. I have another one on the way. And I have a full-time job that I work at for approximately 12 hours a day, plus my commute.
Right.
Help. Help.
Help, become... help.
I was wondering what was coming at the end of that.
Yeah, I was too.
How do I become a nonconformist? Is it just limited to professional, because most everybody's been saying how they've gotten into an alternate line of work or something of that nature? What can I do to continue to work to put my kids through school and so on, yet be a nonconformist in other areas of my life?
Well, what do you want to do in other areas of your life, Paul?
Well, see, that's the $64,000 question.
I don't know. It's a very simple question. I'm going to ask that to you again. Paul, if you saw yourself doing exactly what you wanted, you not dependent on whether or not it was paying for that child to go through college or making the car payment on the BMW or whatever, but you saw yourself doing exactly what you wanted, what would you be doing?
I would be assisting people, like I do now in many respects.
Right.
Giving them advice and giving them being like a concierge in some respects, helping them out with immediate help, organizing them, making them do what I think is right, having them follow my designs. And that's about as vague as I can get, because
if you could just name one specific thing that you could picture yourself doing. You're almost afraid of saying it out loud, but you could see yourself doing X. What would X be?
It's going to take some time on that.
That's the key.
Three years of law school zapped all the creativity out of me.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Almost 30 years of practice. I don't have goals anymore. Right now, I'm just existing. I'm just moving through life. And life, the days are getting shorter. Or faster, I don't know what they say, but
right.
You know, I'm moving through life, and all my goals that I had when I was younger are met. It's just difficult to find new goals.
Okay, and I would argue, Paul, that you have them. You just haven't been able to come to terms with them yet, but they're there. And it may be a thought that you've trained yourself to keep knocking out of your brain. And so in a way you just can't make peace with it, but whatever that is, you know, start with the book. Actually pick up a copy of The Art of Nonconformity, from Chris Gillibo. It'll really give you a good start to sort of seeing what the framework is, and try that experiment of writing out your perfect day from the moment you get up to the moment you go to bed. What is happening in your perfect day? And it may tell you, it may reveal a lot more than you want to admit. Alex is in Bemidji, Minnesota. Wonderful town. Hey, Alex.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You were talking a lot about people starting businesses, being an entrepreneur, and I couldn't ever see myself doing that. What I want to get to in life is, you know, I'm being employed and having a steady paycheck. And, well, I'm 25 now. I've been going to college for about 7 years now. And, you know, finally it's getting to the point where I'm about to graduate with a 1-year diploma after going to school for about 7 years. And talking to prospective employers, you know, the thing I keep hearing is you got to have a master's degree to really be to get a good job and to get a high paying job. And, you know, I don't want to be stuck in college forever. You know, that seems to be the conformist especially, thing.
Especially at the rate of 7 years for a 1-year degree.
It might take you a long time to get that master's degree.
Yeah.
Well, I've definitely transferred to different schools and changed major.
Chris, go ahead. What would you recommend?
Well, I guess I wouldn't recommend going to graduate school at this point, and I just want to be clear. I don't necessarily think graduate school or any kind of education is bad or the wrong choice, but I think, you know, if you're not sure what comes next, you know, if you're not doing it for a reason, I don't see, you know, why you'd want to go and get, you know, even further in debt for something that may or may not help you. So, you know, if you want to be an entrepreneur, I mean, not everyone should be an entrepreneur, but if you want to be an entrepreneur, then I mean, the way you start thinking about that, you don't have to go to business school for that. I mean, you can read books, you can read blogs, you can consume all kinds of free content. You can just start doing things, you know, like I did when I started importing coffee. I had no idea how to do that. I just kind of started doing it and learning as I went along. So, I mean, it sounds to me like you've had a lot of schooling, and, you know, I'm wondering, like, you know, how much experience have you had? Is there a way you can get more experience in doing something? Because I think whether you end up working for yourself or whether you work for someone else, at a certain point, I think people are more interested in what you've done rather than, you know, how much schooling you had or where you went to school.
Okay, yeah. So your advice would be just to try to find a job and, you know, get as much experience as I can with different things.
Or start something on your own, you know, or find a way to start a small project without spending a lot of money. I'm a big advocate for not going into debt for pretty much anything, but not only education, but also for starting a business. I think you can start most businesses for $100 or less.
Alex, What do you want to do, Alex?
Yeah, good question.
I'm going into forestry is what I'm trying to get into. And basically, most of the job opportunities are in government agencies. And but, yeah, I don't want to run my own business. I want to work for someone.
Okay.
Well, good. That's good to know about yourself. Yeah. And there's no shame in becoming a forest ranger and or, you know, getting into a program like that. But that kind of goes back to a question I had hanging out before the top of the hour. You know, are there not still government programs where they can, you know, to transition people from one career to another career? You know, I don't know about the Matthew Lescos of the world, the people that do the infomercials and everything about that, but that's not a bad way to think about it, is it, Chris?
No, I don't think it's a bad way at all. I guess I would say, though, nice work if you can get it. You know, I think it's one of those things where yes, I'm sure there are some government grants and scholarships, and that's fantastic, you know, if somebody can get that. But I also think it's probably the kind of thing where it's a zero-sum game where, you know, like hundreds of people are applying for each grant or each scholarship. And so if you don't get it, well, you know, that's that. So to me, I mean, the great thing about the Internet is it's the democratizer of fundraising. So, you know, I would go out and look for, you know, whatever government grants or assistance or scholarship was available. But I would also, you know, start a blog. I would also look at Kickstarter.org, which is a great service where you can do, you know, personal fundraising. And you can say, like, I've got this goal to put on this play, to take this trip, to start this charity, whatever it is, you know, and I need $10,000 or whatever it is I need to do it. And, you know, you invite people to participate with you. And that's the small army concept of getting people to kind of, you know, rally behind your cause. So I think in many ways that's better. You know, if you can get the government grant, great, you know. But,
All right. Well, we'll pick that up. We'll pick that up right next then. Hang on. Last raft of calls, but they're all there. They all want to talk with Chris Guillebeau on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. You know, the last caller was talking about how he really wanted to work in forestry and didn't want to start a company of his own or anything. I just happened to type in the Minnesota DNR, right, the Department of Natural Resources, and there are a bunch of jobs up there. I don't know how many of them are filled or how quickly they get filled, but they're still posted. And worth looking into. You know, sometimes that's it. We just kind of assume that what we hear or what we absorb by osmosis is true, that there's nothing there, that there is no opportunity, or that people wait for opportunity to come to them. And that's part of the art of nonconformity, is not doing that. It's deciding what you are, what you're about, what you really want to be doing, and then go finding it. And if you can't find it, go make it. It'll find you. And we'll get to Chris Guillebeau coming up next with some more advice for the art of nonconformity, helping you live out your dreams, helping you save our economy, save all of us, save the planet by coming up with that next great idea that's in within you somewhere. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Wildcard Damien is in Anaheim, California, on Coast to Coast for Chris Guillebeau, the art of nonconformity. Damien?
Hi. Thank you so much, Ian, for this topic. It really speaks to me at this time of my life. I'm 28 years old.
Then I can say right here, in all integrity, I can say, Damien, it's all for you, Damien.
Right. Yeah, God is funneling it through you.
I'm sure you hear that all the time from the omen, but go ahead.
Right, yeah. So anyway, I've been living back at home for about 2.5 years, kind of trying to figure out what I really want to do. And I know I want 3 things. I want to be a dancer choreographer. I want to travel the world. And I want to be abundant financially. And I'm always on the verge these days of really, like, finding the key to putting it all together. And so, yeah, kind of, like, seeking some advice with that, how I can kind of,
that's
like...
cool.
Yeah.
You're in the right part of the country for the choreographer thing, aren't you?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I kind of want to do it very kind of nonconformist, though, like, very kind of innovative, unique, quirky, and individualist, though. Not Hollywood so much, though.
Sure, but at least you're not in, you know, in some place where there's no choreography jobs available.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, Chris.
No, that's great. So I was just listening to the 3 things. It was number 1, choreography, dance choreography.
Yeah, creating art.
Number 2, traveling the world. And number 3, financial abundance. Is that right?
Yeah. And I was trying to see if there was a way I could, like, get the art to create abundance for me so that, like, it could finance everything.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering about the financial abundance. Does that just mean, like, you don't want to be poor? I mean, how does that tie into the career and the travel?
I was thinking about creating a show that I could, like, perform on the street, or, like, becoming, like, a busker into, like, getting into a venue to maybe, like, have that generate money for me, because I really don't see myself, like, doing a day job to support my art. I want to have my art be my source of abundance.
So where can people go to find out about your art now? Like,
it's all kind of like you
put together a show. Have you done any tours, anything like that?
No, it's all. Well, I mean, I have kind of a network of friends around me, but I don't really have like a. I have business cards too, but I don't really have a sense of a website. I don't have anything solid thus far.
Right.
It's like it's an idea on the verge of like being actualized.
Right. No, it sounds great, and I like the idea of integrating different things together. I mean, I like the idea of not keeping them separate. I like that whole idea of, like, let's do this, and then let's also do this, and then, you know, obviously it has to have a sustainable model as well. So, I mean, I think it's a question of creating the story, of creating the show, right? And then, you know, and then building interest. And there's 2 ways to build interest. I mean, you know, from California, you realize, like, the traditional way of building interest is pitching people and pitching producers and pitching, you know, agents and the right people to get you somewhere. And it's kind of like what we were talking before about government money. Nice work if you can get it. I mean, if that works, that's great. That's fantastic. But if it doesn't, then I think you have another opportunity. You have a way of basically creating the message yourself of, you know, getting your own fan base, and then you have direct contact with the fan base, and then you can take the show on the road. I mean, right now I'm doing the unconventional book tour that I'm doing right now. I'm doing that completely with my fan base or my reader base or whatever you want to call my community. Like, my publisher is not paying for that. I just decided I want to go to all 50 states. I know people, you know, are out there in all 50 states, so I'll just put it out there and find a way to make it work. And it's one of those things that, like, the more you do it, the more sustainable it becomes. And so as you get a good story, as you get a good message, and then you find people who connect with you and enjoy it, they want to spread that message. They want to tell other people about it. Then it becomes more financially sustainable. And then hopefully you get more opportunities to tour, you know, to go overseas or wherever it is you want to go. So I think it's a question of getting the right message, getting the right, you know, show or content or whatever, and then, you know, taking it to the next level from there.
Well,
there was some fear I had about just, like, putting myself out there so bluntly with my nonconformity and with my truth. There's that sense of that being the thing that's kind of like the fear essence being blocking, kind of like me taking the next step with it at this point.
Yeah, but that will be the good thing. That will be the benefit. That's what people want to know about, right? I mean, so the more right. unique it is, the more personal it is, the more Damien is in it. That's what people will want. So it's right. ironic that the thing that we're afraid of is actually the thing that usually most benefits us in the end, which is ironic.
Okay. No, just real quickly, too, and thank you, Damien. I think you'd also enjoy The Art of Nonconformity, the book. Was his use of the word abundance, you use that in the book, right?
I do, and I use it usually in comparison to the word scarcity. And so kind of like, you know, just looking at two different concepts, you know, the concept of scarcity is thinking about competition in terms of a zero-sum game and thinking, you know, that, you know, for me to win in my career, Damien or someone else has to lose, you know. That's the concept of scarcity, whereas the concept of abundance is, you know, Damien can have this great career, he can build this great platform and have fans all over the world, and, you know, I'm not hindered by that. I can do the same thing, and so can anyone else. And, you know, anyone can have a message, anyone can create, you know, an audience, anyone can be successful without harming someone else. I think that's the view of abundance that I think about.
I agree. Let's go to wildcard three, where Duke is in Kentucky. I'm not sure about that. Isn't that Duke? If you're in Kentucky, wouldn't that be a little bit like somebody named Kentucky being in Durham, North Carolina? You get a lot of
no.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
What's up?
So you're talking with Chris Guillebeau.
Yo, I'm a college student, and I'm conservative, and I'm not atheist. And on Facebook, that's the most rebellious thing I can do because I get called a caveman all the time.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I nonconform.
No,
well,
I think
that's good. I would never call you
fair.
A caveman.
Yeah, if I say anything conservative or against Obama or I say anything pro God, I'm struck down on Facebook pretty hard, and that's the most nonconformist thing you can seem to do it at my age right now.
Well, maybe it's just the people you know on Facebook, because isn't Sarah Palin pretty big on Facebook? I mean, I think there's a pretty big conservative audience on Facebook as well.
She's more of a Twitter. She's more of a tweeter. She tweets.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. But I think it's fair, Duke. And I think there's a question, though, too, between being a nonconformist and just being somebody that likes to give, you know, a thumb in the eye. And maybe some people put themselves in a place where they're surrounded by people that don't agree with them, and they want to be that. That's part of how they know who they are,
right,
is to
right.
always be in conflict. And I think the art of nonconformity is much bigger than just being in a place where you're the odd person out all the time.
Yeah, and I would say also it's not so much as being negative or critical, but, you know, what solution are you bringing? So I don't think it's a bad thing that you're conservative or you're not an atheist or anything like that. Of course, you should be yourself, and that's great. But then I would also, like, you know, if I see people putting forward negative views that I don't agree with, my question to them is always, what's the solution? You know, if you don't like what's happening in the government, then, what, you know, what's the solution? If you don't like what's happening with this thing, what would you do better? And so I'm always open to people who present solutions and ideas, you know, regardless of their perspective, as long as they're open-minded, as long as they respect, you know, other people, I think that's great.
Mark is in Philadelphia on Coast to Coast on a wild card line for Chris Guillebeau.
Great show, guys. Ian, I'm sorry. I'm on my last click of my cell phone, so I'm sorry to cut off.
No, but give it, then just go quick to the question.
First of all, I am so sorry for that attorney who said he went to law school and he's been doing this for 30 years. I left law school twice, believe it or not, successfully, and I consider it one of the greatest decisions I made both times. So I wish him the best. My brush with nonconformity basically focuses about 12 years ago when I discovered what's considered the second face on Mars, and I ran a very popular website about the subject. And I ended up having probably about 3,000 visitors a day, about 1,500 of which turned out to be visitors from space battle labs and NASA and the Congress and the White House. I seemed to get a lot of very focused attention on what I was doing at the time, which was extremely nonconformist because I was questioning what was really going on as far as the research and the pictures and the study of Mars and so forth. And in the upshot was at the very end of the situation, I ended up getting called by people that proof to me they were part of, you know, the Langley Alphabet Agency, let's say. Mm-hmm. And they asked me very good questions. And at that point, I decided, you know what, I better unload a lot of New Age gobbledygook mixed in with, you know, the super high energy physics and all the other, thoughts I had on these very arcane subjects they were asking about. I ended up shutting down the website and traveling the world and sort of getting out of here. And it was just interesting because I really pushed it with the nonconformity like I have my whole life, you know, the long hair, all the sort of nonconformist sort of ways of living. But when the rubber hit the road, when I got confronted with this sort of very powerful agencies and these questions that they were having, it was sort of a wake-up call, and I sort of went the other way. The one other quick point, if I can make, you guys were sort of verging on talking about the sort of create your own reality previously.
Yeah.
I think it goes without saying that the primer and one of the most powerful books I've ever experienced with it that I hope people will enjoy is Shakti Gawain's Creative Visualization, which came out in the late 70s, and is a very powerful book. Synchronization maybe with Energy Ecstasy by Dr. Bernard Gunther, and Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda. Some of those books, I urge people just do your own reading, do your own meditation, sort of find your own access point into this, the sort of create your own reality thing.
Sure.
Don't get caught up in the sort of groups that do it, but do your own thing out on the beach, meditating, really sort of vibing with the idea of sending out these mind waves and creating your own reality. And I've had some very powerful effects there. So people will do that.
I appreciate that. Let's go to Tom in Modesto, California on Coast to Coast. Tom?
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Couldn't be better. Thank you. You're talking with Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Chris. I graduated with a degree that probably nobody understood because the true intent of it was really a commercial secret on my part. I got a degree in man-machine interface in commercial aviation. But what I did was, having been in the Air Force before I went and got this particular degree, I had a lot of flight time. I already had my credentials as a pilot. And what I did was create, instead of, if you know anything about flying, instead of having six or eight or more instruments with which to derive your position and the performance of the airplane to what now commercial airliners have, where they have sort of a, you know, the instrumentation shows a view from the top and a view from behind, so to speak, and the
right,
cues
right.
for flight directors, things like that.
Yep.
I created, in essence, a one CRT or one cathode ray tube presentation. In other words, something that was three-dimensional.
Interesting.
It was stunning.
How's that working out for you?
Well, here's the thing. One of my advisors was a senior psychologist from Boeing, worked for commercial airplane side. And when I sat down and talked with him initially about what I was doing, he promised me immediately an interview with Boeing as soon as I graduated. And I did eventually go to work for Boeing, but it was always the carrot and stick, except, you know, in that case, there was no carrot. It was all stick.
Okay.
Well, I had to constantly avoid the fish hook.
Is there a question here for Chris? Or in a way
yes,
we can
there
help?
Is. I never developed it because I could never find the right partnership or the right way. And financial circumstances, as I happen to find myself in right now, have provided the push to make me get back into doing something with my life so that I can eventually fund this and develop it myself.
Okay.
Because
so the question
is, there's nothing out there like this.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Tom. It sounds almost like something we talked about earlier in the program with somebody else with a similar kind of engineering project. You know, I don't know much about that, about how aerospace engineering works. I mean, it sounds, you know, interesting and important. But I think that kind of thing almost, you know, if you're looking for financial backer, you almost need a partner of some kind. You need somebody to invest in it. So maybe that's not Boeing. Maybe that's not a big company, but maybe there's some upstart company, you know, where you could have, you know, some ownership in it, but then you're partnering with somebody to do the investment. But I don't know a whole lot about how that works.
Yeah, find somebody who's doing something like what you think yours would be like, and then go talk to them. What the heck? And just call them up and say, would you entertain a lunch, or would you look at a plan? You know, call their lawyer. Say, what do I have to do to submit something? Go with people who are already doing something like that. Start there. Rod is in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, on Coast to Coast. Rod?
Good day, gentlemen. Good day. Hey, I'm a nonconformist my whole life, basically. But I had the privilege of between 1990 and 2003 or 4. I lived in Amish country in a small housing development. And I think they're the ultimate nonconformists.
That's great.
It was, what happened was, like I said, it was a small housing development, and we were surrounded by Amish farms. So I started developing a relationship with the Amish, basically because they're very simple people. They're always peaceful, and they seem a little more happier than the rest of society. And I would purchase organic vegetables and fruits from them, also milk for a dollar a gallon. And we'd make our own butter, mayonnaise, and every 6-7 months I would buy half a cow. They would slaughter it, and also pigs, and they would butcher it for me. And I stopped watching television in 1996 because I refused to pay somebody else to watch my own TV. But also that, and I've never used a computer, nor do I own a cell phone, because of fiber optics. I worked with in the military, and I don't own a GPS. The compass, always trust your compass.
I think you're right by saying this is the ultimate kind of nonconformity. And so are you still living this lifestyle now then?
I don't watch TV. I don't have a computer, nor do I own a cell phone because of Big Brother. And I learned that in the military. I'm a veteran. I worked with, I was a ranger.
Okay.
And GPS was introduced to us back in the 80s, and it was only for emergency purposes if you got lost.
Sure.
You needed evac, you know, and everything is recorded. All cell phone calls are recorded, fiber optics through television. The government watches you while you're watching TV. And you also know that when you use a computer, everything is documented. So I'm escaping that. I don't need it. And the Amish, I remember Y2K. People surrounded me, my work people that I worked with. Oh, what are we going to do? Y2K? I said, why are you panicking? The Amish, they're not going to panic.
No. I think you made a perfect choice for you. It gives us time for just get one more in here for Matthew from Wyoming. Matthew?
Yeah.
Got to be fast.
Basically, I've been a web developer since 94, and I've held some web development senior level jobs, and I was misdiagnosed. And the new diagnosis is Asperger's, previously with schizophrenia, which I think is far cry.
Right.
But basically, I would like to know how I could help people with computers, but at the same time, making a decent living.
Okay, good question. Chris?
No, that's great. I think I heard most of that. I mean, web development is a huge skill. It's a hugely needed skill. And I rely on a web developer to do all kinds of genius stuff that I have no idea how it works. But, you know, I ask him to do stuff, and he goes and makes it happen. So I would say these days, a lot of people in social media, a lot of bloggers are looking for web developers, because they have ideas on something that they want. They don't know how to do it. So the way that you can connect with them is if you are on Twitter, if you do have some kind of blog of your own. It doesn't have to be a professional blog. You don't have to write every day. But if you have some kind of presence and you put yourself out there and say, I am a web developer and here's what I do, and explain that very clearly in English, not in web developer ease, you know, for the rest of us, then I think, you know, that's very easy to get projects and to, you know, start doing freelance, and one thing tends to lead to another. So I think that's a great skill to have.
And you can be home the whole time while you're doing it too. The art of nonconformity. I think this has been very helpful for people to help create the second end of their life. Thank you, Chris. God bless you in all your travels and reaching to your goal of getting to all those countries in before you turn 35. And everybody else, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.